Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet,
sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, I have the pleasure of having Benjamin Kologi. He is out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He's a chapel organist at SMU, Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. If you have any questions, feel free to pose a question in the chat room or dial in at 347-324-3460. Benjamin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I guess to begin with, our audience would like to hear personal views of the people we talk to. So kind of tell us where you're from and how did you get started?
Well, I'm from the Dallas area. I'm from Richardson, actually. And like most musicians, I began when I was quite young. I began playing piano. I guess it was second grade. But I wasn't honestly too... too interested in piano. I thought you could make a lot more sound once I had heard the organ. And you could do it all yourself. You could make the sound of an orchestra, of a band, of all sorts of things with the organ, whereas the piano, I thought you were a bit limited. Now, of course, there's great pianists out there, and I don't want to offend them because they can make great sounds out of their instrument. But at the time, you know, you're third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, and it was about seventh grade or so where I really decided that organ was a better choice for me, and so I took organ lessons all throughout junior high and high school, and then eventually went to college, got an undergraduate degree in organ performance, and then sacred music as well, because most of the time the organ is found in the church, and we work in the church. So I was drawn to the organ primarily because you can make so much sound, so much music, just from one instrument. And whereas a conductor, a choir conductor, or an orchestral conductor, you have to have all sorts of musicians working for and with you in order to make your sound. With the organ, you didn't need that. You just needed to have an empty church and your fingers, and you could make all the sound you wanted. Consequently, I think the organ kind of draws introverted characters to it and to its music, and I think many organists find themselves to be introverts, and that's certainly the case with me.
Wow. So kind of bring us back to the seventh grade. I know you mentioned you started with piano. How at the seventh grade, the ages and been a seventh grader to propel you, hey, I want to be the organist. I want the loudest instrument in the room. I want to make the Raptors shake.
Well, I was exposed to good church music,
mm-hmm.
and good church music can be inspirational. There's also not so good church music, but I was exposed to good church music, fortunately, and I thought, you know, I really want to participate in this. I want to help make really good music like this, even from that age.
Okay. So when you start, kind of tell us how the lessons progressed. What did you start with when it comes to the organ? And did you start with, number two question, did you start just automatically with pipes, or you just started regular electronic organ and build your way up there?
That's a good question, because I actually started on the electronic organ that we had at my church at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never recommend that for anybody, because the technology is great for electronic organs, but I had to relearn everything once I was introduced to the pipe organ, because ultimately an electronic organ, even though it serves a good purpose, it can't recreate the sound of pipes, real pipes. So my first couple years or so, I was only exposed to the electronic instrument, and I thought I was doing pretty well. But then I got to another organ teacher, and he taught me on a pipe organ, and I very quickly found out how much I was missing by not having been exposed, not being able to play a regular pipe organ on a regular basis. So my first lessons, I guess it would have been in 9th or 10th grade with my teacher on a pipe organ were very difficult. And organ teachers are sometimes, they can be mean to their students in order for their students to learn. And that was, I learned much from, he was one of my first teachers. And I learned a lot from him. We studied some simple Bach preludes and fugues and hymns from the hymnal played properly. But he didn't let me get by with anything. And I had to, if you're going to be an organist, you have to discipline yourself and you have to work hard because there's no way of fooling people. If you make a mistake, everybody hears. So it was good that he inspired me with discipline and fear at the same time.
Well, with a piano, you can't get by with a piano because it's kind of a two-dimensional. There's too many dimensions in an organ for you to really hide a mistake. Do you think that's true?
Yeah. Well, you can't really hide mistakes on the piano either. I don't want to imply that. But an organ generally is a bigger and grander and louder instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And you're usually playing for lots of people. So it is my opinion that your mistakes are more evident. And to put it in a positive way, if you really know what you're doing, the organ can lead the congregation or the audience to wherever the musician wants to take them, in a very profound way, because you do have these powerful sounds, which you don't have with any other musical medium except perhaps an orchestra.
Wow. You know, I was listening to an episode on NPR that an artist was talking about the way she plays things, and she was talking about she can accompany on one hand and put the melody on the other. The simplicity of that makes her music, and if you talk about an organ, you can do almost the same thing, but with the piano, you can kind of make it through a certain way that you can't necessarily make it on an organ. You can, you know, play two manuals, whatever, and still make it sound good. But you have this other dimension, which is the pedal, that you have to make sure all these is synchronized. I guess is mentally putting all these pieces together to make it work, which when you're at the piano, you only actually have to worry about two hands. It's coming to pieces. Now you have to worry about two hands and a foot to work with at the same time. So even when you build that type of momentum, what does it do to you to make sure all these pieces work together?
Well, it's funny because just last week we had a concert pianist come perform at my church in our concert series, and someone was asking him, and they said, "Do you play the organ as well?" And he quickly responded. He said, no, I cannot play the organ. I don't play the feet. I don't know a thing about that." And I get that quite a bit, where piano players or musicians in general are mystified by the fact that we have to play with our feet, too. I would just say that if you can figure out how to play with one hand, and certainly if you can figure out how to play with two hands, there's really no difference in learning how to play with your feet. It comes naturally very shortly in your studies. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's some unnecessary fear. People look at an organist and see what they do with their feet, and they say, "Oh, I can't possibly do that." But that's, you can learn to do anything and fairly easily. That said, though, you do have to worry about coordination, and we're, you know, no matter how many years we've studied, we organists always have to be concerned with our hands and feet, playing everything at the same time, releasing at the same time. You know, pianists don't so much have to worry about releasing their notes. They just have to worry about striking their notes.
Mm-hmm.
We not only have to worry about striking our notes, but we have to have a coherent and coordinated release of the notes, because when you push a key on an organ, it opens an airflow into a pipe, and the pipe will speak and sing as long as you have that key pressed down. You release the key, and the sound stops. So we have to deal with both the front end of the sound and the back end of the sound, both on your manuals, what you play with your hands, and your feet. So, yeah, that is a lot to coordinate.
Wow. So when you talked about earlier, top of the show, you talked about the electronic organ, and you learned on electronic organ. What is the differences between the two?
Well, most simply, of course, these days electronic organs are produced by digital samplings.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, these are very, very fine qualities of samples. In fact, in some cases, they're actually recorded. They go to famous pipe organs in the world and record each pipe note by note, by pipe, and incorporate that into a digital instrument. Electronic instrument is what we would call them, I suppose. The problem is the playback mechanism. You really are limited to the amount and quality of speakers you have. In a pipe organ, you can think of every pipe as its own speaker. It produces sound that radiates from every direction, 365 degrees. And so a small pipe organ, you know, may only have several hundred pipes, and a large pipe organ will have many, many thousands. Whereas on an electronic organ, even if you have some very good digital samplings, you are still limited by the number and quality of speakers. You can have sub-bass woofer speakers and tweeters and everything, but essentially they can't produce that live sound that a real pipe is able to produce. And, of course, this is a debate in the organ community. There are many organists who have electronic instruments installed in their churches, and they use them very well, and the instruments serve a good purpose. But we as organists, we always tend to gravitate, if we have a choice, to real pipes because the sound is much more authentic and satisfying.
Why there are so many pipes? I think you mentioned the makeup of a pipe organ.
Why are there so many?
Why are there so many?
Well, each pipe produces one sound at one pitch. So, for example, a pipe organ on its manuals has 61 keys. A piano has 88, so that's a bit fewer than a piano. So each of those keys is associated with one pipe. Each one of those pipes is categorized in its own what's called a rank or a stop.
Mm-hmm.
And a stop or a rank has its own sound. It will perhaps imitate a flute or a trumpet or an oboe. So if I sit down and I say I want to play as if I'm playing on a flute, I pull out a stop called the flute or something like that, and I can play. With that stop, there's 61 pipes. And then, of course, I can add another stop, which will have 61 pipes. And then it gets more complicated than that because a few stops will have more than 61 and a few will have less based on where they are. But in general, you know, you add these together and subtract them, and like an orchestra, you know, you have a flute play with an oboe and you have the strings play. You do that with an organ, too. You add these stops together. Consequently, though, you need to have a lot of pipes in order to have not only the different pitches but the different sound qualities in order to add them together.
Okay, that makes sense. So you're having more pipes to produce the different types of sounds, and that's why you end up with so many.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, today economics kind of dictate a person who's trying to learn, and they're going to most likely, 9 out of 10, I would say, unless they really go to a university or somewhere that church that has a pipe organ, they're going to learn on a electric because it's movable, it's more practical, it's more affordable for a person to start on before they actually get onto the pipe itself. Everybody's not going to let you on their pipe organ to learn. But taken in that, is there certain organs that, in your opinion, like the Allen, the Rogers, or whatever, are there very good samples of a rural type organ, the sound of an organ?
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to promote one brand over the other. I will say that all of the brands, you mentioned Allen and Rogers, and those are two of the most prominent American brands. There's also European brands that you can buy. I would say, I think it's a fair assumption to assertion these days to say that all of the electronic organ builders have very high quality sound reproduction. You know, you can be fairly certain if you get a late model, you know, a new electronic organ, that you're going to get a good quality instrument. As I said earlier, you're limited by your speakers, and you can get cheaper Allens and Rogers that have speakers only within the case. And that's good for putting in your living room for practice. You know, obviously with two speakers, you're not going to get a lot of sound or very good quality. But it's perfect for in your living room. In fact, at home, I have a small Rogers, which has a few pipes, but also has electronic sounds with it as well. And I very much enjoy using the electronic sounds with the pipes.
Okay. And for, like, for example, any differences between the American-made electronic organs versus, like, the European-made, like, the Johannes-type organs? Or are they pretty much they are equal in sound?
Well, in terms of the sound quality you're going to get, all the sound quality is equal these days.
Okay.
The European builders are a bit more conservative, I would say. I think you'll have fewer options insofar as couplers and sounds and that sort of thing. I used to have a Dutch electronic organ at my church, and it was much more conservative. The Allen and Rogers will have many more capabilities for a MIDI interface and extra sounds that you can plug in. I suspect the European brands will get with the program before too much longer.
Okay.
And they'll have all of those capabilities too. And I'm pretty sure that Rogers and Allen and the American brands are cheaper, just simply due to the exchange rate with the euro right now.
Okay, great. We're going to take a break real quick. I'm with Benjamin Kaloji. He is a chapel organist at SMU in Dallas and also the dean for the Dallas chapter of American Organist Guild. We'll be back in a moment from a break from our sponsor.
You're listening to The Core Business Show, sponsored by Apple Capital Group. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida, is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com. Welcome back to The Core. Once again, here's Tim Jacquet.
Well, I'm back with Benjamin Kaloji. We are talking about the essence of pipe organ music. Going back to the digital and the combination of pipes, in your opinion, is that a good blend? Are they doing a good job today in trying to give you both worlds?
You mean an instrument that has both?
Have both.
Yes, certainly. And one of the problems that you always had with a combination instrument is that your pipes would be in a different tuning than your electronics, because your electronics always stay in perfect tune. But, you know, pipes are real metal objects, and they go out of tune based on the weather. And so the technology is such that they can be integrated pretty much seamlessly into an organ, so it's a very good option. Many churches are choosing to do that in order to save money these days.
Is it really expensive to maintain a pipe organ or a pipe organ combination?
No. I think that's one of the myths that sometimes prevent people from getting pipe organs. I think it would be better to frame the issue in terms of if your pipe organ is used on a regular basis, like my pipe organs I have at church and at university, I play them every day, and at home, I give them a lot of use. That's what they need. If you only play your organ once every 6 months, once a year, once every 3 months, you have a much greater chance of something going wrong. If your pipe organ gets regular use, and on my pipe organs, I'll go up and I'll sometimes there's a pipe out of tune or something, and I'll just go up and take 5 minutes and I'll fix it myself.
Wow.
It's as long as you kind of maintain things as you go along, and you have a good builder, and your organ is quality to begin with, you should not need a lot of maintenance costs. You know, there any electronic instrument, particularly these days that are integrated with computers, you do run the risk of something happens, there's a spike in the electricity or something like that. But we have so many preventative measures these days that really seldom happens. And as long as you use your organ, the pipe organ will last many more years than an electronic organ, just because a pipe organ is made of real equipment, real metal pipes that they just last forever unless something terrible happens to them. Whereas, with your laptop computer, you're having to replace that every couple years in order to keep up with the most recent technology. And the same is the case if you have an solely electronic organ. You're going to have to replace it every 20 years or so because the electronics just kind of wear down over time.
Okay. When it comes to maintenance itself, is the expense of maintaining a combination or just all pipe organ, do you get them tuned once a year, and how much does it normally run?
Well, it's a good idea to get them fully tuned twice a year.
Okay.
And once in the spring and once in the fall, because of they're susceptible to the temperature changes, and so it's just good to do them twice a year. And it depends on the size of your pipe organ. If your pipe organ is only 25, 30 ranks, a full tuning will probably be several hundred dollars.
Mm-hmm.
If your pipe organ is huge, like the Crystal Cathedral or Riverside Church in New York City, I'm sure it's much, much more, but most of us don't have that problem that we have to worry about.
Wow.
And then, a service call will be $100, $150, I suppose. Every organ technician charges differently and
mm-hmm.
based on the work that needs to be done, of course. But I have never found cost to be a prohibitive issue.
Sure. Any difference between the makeup of the organ when it comes to the metal pipes and the wood pipes? Are they kind of equal, or are you trying to get different sounds between the two products?
You have different sounds. For example, most of the time, the stops on the organ that approximate the trumpet sounds, like a trumpet in a symphony orchestra, those are usually metal pipes. It's a loud, very forceful sound. Whereas most of the time, this is not always the case, but generally, pipes that are imitative of flutes, the softer, more gentle sounds, they're usually made of wood. And you will have some tuning issues because as your pipes expand and contract, they have a slightly different pitch, which, of course, as we talked about earlier, the pitch is very important. You have one pipe per pitch per sound. So sometimes the metal and the wood will expand and contract at different rates. And that sometimes makes for interesting tuning when you turn on your organ after a weather change or something, a cold front has come by, and the wooden pipes are one tuning and the metal pipes are another. But they usually acclimate pretty fast after you run some air through them.
Okay. I remember meeting Fris one probably 15 years ago in Wichita, Kansas, in school, and he said, oh my gosh, he loved the concept, he loved his organ, but when he was at the Crystal Cathedral, it was a nightmare because it was a glass building. And with a glass building is like, we know in Texas, when it gets hot in there, when it gets cold, it gets cold. And he had the two extremes during the daytime, you know, when they're not there. His business manager is not going to keep the same temperature in a glass building. So, you know, they're not going to have it going to an extreme, but, you know, 80 is one extreme. Right. And then at the evening, they can deal with 60 or something like that. But it has to be in that particular range. They will not go and keep it 70 or 75 throughout the whole season. And he said constantly they had to keep someone almost nearly on staff to keep that particular tuning. And that's going to be an extreme case. You're not going to have that type of situation with an organ.
Yeah, the Crystal Cathedral is a unique architectural monument, but it was not designed for music or pipe organs. Part of the problem is not only the heating and cooling, but glass is not particularly good for the acoustics that pipe organs like to find themselves in. It's not particularly reflective, and the acoustics in that building are very difficult. But like you say, most of us don't have to deal with an all-glass building, so it's okay.
If a church is looking to do a pipe electronic combination because it's affordable, what advice will you give them when they begin a search? Is that dollar amount they need to look at? They need to look at the building. Then they look at the builder. What advice will you give them?
What they need to do first is to ascertain in a detailed manner their own needs. What their church, what their concert hall needs, what kind of music they like to do, because organs are made in different styles for different types of music. You know, organs will have German accents or French accents or Italian accents based on who builds them and what the church wants. There's a number of fine organizations, particularly the Organ Clearinghouse, which I think is just organclearinghouse.com, but you can find it fairly easily. They have redundant organs that have been given away or are no longer used, and they're available for very cheap or even for free for sometimes. Of course, you have to get them installed. That's not free. But there are all sorts of options. So a church first needs to determine what type of music it wants to do, and then what sort of instrument will best lead that sort of music. And then from there, of course, you can go to your builders. It's sometimes a good idea to consult an actual consultant. Maybe there's a professor of organ at a university nearby or a prominent organist in a local church who really knows what they're doing. Oftentimes, church organ committees, they don't know this information. The organ field is very specialized, and there's no way that I can give advice to a doctor or to a computer programmer and make their job any easier. You know, it would be bad advice. And so sometimes it's a very good idea to get a trained consultant who can navigate them through what they need in an organ and then how to go about addressing that need. Which builder would be best? Would an electronic or a pipe organ be best? What can they afford? A consultant is always a good place to begin.
Wow. Talking about the Organ Clearinghouse, I think for some churches, they have a lot of things across the board that a person can get, and different styles and different sounds, which we're going to touch about in a few seconds. But if they do go that particular option, and instead of having one custom built, what are the advantages of having this particular option versus getting a organ builder to build one specifically for your particular church?
Well, I have done this myself. The primary option, your primary advantage is money. You will save a lot of money if you use a redundant organ, one that has been used, and that draws many church committees to a used organ or to Organ Clearinghouse. There was one church in our area recently who was giving away a very large instrument because they were purchasing a brand new multi-million dollar instrument, and they needed to get rid of their old instrument, which was actually fairly large, and it's going to be a blessing to some church. Actually, they did find a church that wanted it, and it's going to be quite a blessing. This church got it for nothing. It'll be an investment to put it in, but considering what it would have been new, it saves them a lot of money. Secondly, there are a lot of very fine, interesting, unique historical instruments that aren't being used and that need homes. And there are some great opportunities to find these historic instruments that can benefit your church or your concert hall on a regular basis. And, you know, they come with a story. They come with a history. They come from their own time period and their own sounds. If you buy a used instrument, you may not be able, well, you won't be able to dictate, well, I need these particular sounds for my worship service or my liturgy. You'll pretty much be stuck with what it has. But those can be just glorious, and from an era and a time that we're not in anymore, and we can approach it with, you know, fresh ears and fresh sounds.
Wow. So when they take a look at that and they look at that particular website and they say, hey, oh, this looks like it would fit. They don't know what it sounds like. Any downside of having an organ like that? I mean, you can purchase a console in one sense, I mean, or get the console, but then you also have to figure out how to deal with the pipes as well.
Yes, and one of the problems would be organs are made for their own space. They're large instruments. And sometimes a particular space is not suited for a particular organ. That's one good thing about buying an organ new from one of the builders. They can tailor make it for your space. Most of us don't have gigantic, huge buildings with a whole bunch of extra space just to put pipe organs in, although some do. But generally, that's not the situation we find ourselves in. So new organs are able to be designed to fit into your space limitations. A redundant organ, of course, is going to come with pretty much its own size or shape. And there are some changes, of course, that you can make to that, but you're a little bit more limited than if you were to buy it new.
Okay. Get the last few questions real quick. Are there certain organs, I think, in the Dallas area that, hey, you should really take notice of? You should listen to this one. Likewise, if there's something in the United States, if you look at the top five organs a person need to take a look at, hey, this is what you need to take. You need to listen to this one or take a look at it.
Sure. Well, that's always a dangerous question to answer because you're going to offend somebody who expects to hear their favorite instrument listed.
Okay.
I would say in Dallas that you certainly should hear the organ at the Meyerson Symphony Center.
Okay.
Not only because it is home of the Dallas Symphony, which is such an important cultural aspect of our community, but also it was really one of the first concert hall instruments in the United States in modern times. And my teacher, Robert Anderson, was instrumental in designing and in building that instrument in the late 80s. And it was the first new organ installed in a concert hall in modern times. And it functions so well in that space. The sounds are just beautiful. It has everything from the softest string to the loudest reed trumpet sounds. The pipes go from the size of a pencil to 32 feet tall, which you can see on the facade, the outside of the pipe. You can actually see those 32-foot stops.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's certainly one of the most, if not the most, significant instrument in the Dallas area. And we're fortunate in Dallas to have many nice, even new pipe organs. And I hate to exclude any of them, but I would say that the Meyerson instrument is kind of, it's going to be the centerpiece of our organ culture for a while. They're going to have to build a pretty nice organ to displace the Meyerson as the center of an organ culture. I would say in the United States, there are so many now after the Meyerson that are built for concert halls that are very fine quality instrument. Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles as a fine new instrument. I was recently in San Francisco and I played the organ at Grace Cathedral by a famed organ builder called Aeolian Skinner, and I think that was probably one of the most beautiful instruments I've ever played in terms of its sound and the acoustics and the space. Certainly one of the most significant instruments in the United States. Many people might remember Virgil Fox, the great organist from the mid part of the 20th century. He died in 1980 or 81. He was organist at the Riverside Church in New York City, also by Aeolian Skinner.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very famous instrument that everybody should hear at one point or another.
Okay. And, of course, we're going to talk about the Crystal Cathedral. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
That's a great organ as well.
I hate to leave that one off. That's so important.
Yeah, it's been through a lot. Lastly, a couple questions, real quick. Tell us what the difference is between the German, the French, and the British and American sound in the organ.
Well, that's a very complicated question, and it's a significant question because any organ music that you hear is likely to come from one of those traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And organ music sounds different because it comes from these different countries which developed these different sound traditions. German organs, and here I have to generalize, and you can find exceptions
sure.
to all of these things here. So this is just a generalization. But German organs, they come from the tradition of Johann Sebastian Bach and Dietrich Buxtehude, the great counterpoint composers of the 18th century, meaning there's multiple voices going at one time, and each voice is independent and important. So you will find that German organs have a certain accent that is... It's maybe more the upper sounds, they have mixtures, mutations, what we would call them. That's very important for Germans. English, they have a more foundational sound. Their instruments, they're more warm and almost fuzzy sounding. They may have a lot of bass. French, generalizing here. French organs are very much known for their reed stops, which would be like their trumpets, or those stops approximating the brass instruments of the orchestra. The French reeds can be very fiery and beautiful. America, of course, we inherited all of these traditions and have kind of synthesized it into our own, which is sort of, in the 60s, it was called the American classic tradition, and We tried to take the best from all of those and make them into something American. And I mentioned a few minutes ago Grace Cathedral. That's an instrument that kind of incorporates the best of all of these traditions. They call it an eclectic instrument. And, of course, organists don't always agree with that. Sometimes some organists will say, well, an organ should just represent one style and do that style very well. Another organist will say, no, an organ should be able to approximate as many styles as possible in order to be able to play that music as faithfully as possible. So there's a lot of disagreement as to that. So you can go to organ builders in America, and you can find them that build very fine French organs or German organs, and then you can find some that synthesize all of those traditions and come up with something uniquely beautiful and uniquely American.
Wow. Well said. Last two questions real quick. Who influenced your sound?
Every organist has organists who they revere, and oftentimes it's their teachers. And I come from a tradition where I certainly enjoyed the playing of my teachers. But they were a bit more conservative than the sound that I like to go for. For example, I enjoy playing transcriptions, music originally written for orchestra, but playable on the organ. That was very popular in the early part of the 20th century, then really fell out of favor in the late 20th century. But the younger organists are enjoying playing these transcriptions again, the greatest exponent of which, I suppose, would be Virgil Fox. Many people might know him. Also Thomas Murray from Yale University. He plays many beautiful transcriptions. And I would say that sort of style has influenced me. There are some organists that will not play transcriptions. They want only pure organ music, the best of Bach. And I love those things too, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate a wide variety of organ music. There's so much beautiful music out there, and only a small portion of it is organ music. There's so much great choir music, orchestral music, symphonic music out there. You know, if the organ can manage to play some of that, I've never been able to help myself not to play it, you know.
Okay. If there was an organ out of this country you haven't been to yet that you want to play, I mean, you play from, I'm looking at your sheet, and you have a lot of organs that you have played. If there's an organ you would like to go play, you haven't been there, what organ would that be and where?
Well, I think that I've played so many nice organs lately, I was actually thinking of this. And I think the answer is the Crystal Cathedral. I have never played at the Crystal Cathedral. They've had some trouble lately in the last few years, and they've cut back on their music staff, and they don't have a lot of organ music anymore. But I would really love to play that instrument. It's such a significant instrument in the history of organ building and one of the most significant instruments in the United States.
Wow. Yeah, I think that the Catholic Church bought it, so...
Yeah.
I'm sure they're
going to... We'll see what happens in the next few years when the Catholics take it over, and I hope that they'll revive the tradition of organ music that was so inherent with the Crystal Cathedral several years ago.
I'm sure. The last two questions regarding, do you think organ music is dying, or you think there's a rebirth going on?
Well, I don't think organ music is dying. There's lots
okay.
of people that want to say that, and usually those are people who, well... organ music is taking a different form than it has in the past.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 20th century, famous organists could draw crowds of 20, 30, 40,000 people
mm-hmm.
to their concerts. Routinely this would happen when the European organists would come over here, or even our own organists, like Leonard Farnham, for example, they would draw tens of thousands of people. That, of course, is not practical anymore. That doesn't happen. If you measure the success of organ music by those standards, yes, it's dying and failing. However, I look at my own area here in Plano, North Dallas. We have had so many nice organs, brand new organs installed in churches in the last 10 or 12 years that are used. These organs are used on a daily basis. Concerts are getting more and more numerous on them. There's people to play them, at least in this area. It's a very healthy organ culture. There are a lot of events. You know, no, they don't draw tens of thousands. But you think how people access their music these days. Generally through Amazon.com or MP3s, they download their music. You know, organ music is well represented in recordings and downloadable very easily, and that's how our music is distributed. Also think how many people hear organ music in church these days. I think people oftentimes assume, well, the organ is a dying instrument. I was playing a wedding the other day, and a pastor said, he came up to me and said, oh, I didn't know there were still people who played organ. I didn't know that was still around. And I said, well, yes, I that's the only thing I do for a living. I just play organ. And he was surprised to hear that, because in his church they haven't used the organ for years. But that's not representative of everybody. There are many churches that still value church music as it has been for many years, a good quality church music led by choirs and organs. And, you know, I think it's still an active culture. If there are still, I don't know about, there are dozens of pipe organ builders in the United States that still can maintain their business. I think we're going to face a challenge in the 21st century in so far as how we adapt our music, but the organ always has.
Employee.
And I have no doubt that we'll continue to adapt.
Absolutely. Last question. If you go back in time, any time period you can come up with. And if there is a musician you would like to meet and you would like to say something to, who would be that musician you would like to say something to? If it's 100 years or 200 or 300 or 400 years in the past, who would you like to actually meet and what would you say to them?
Oh, well, that's very easy. I think that my answer will be the same as most organists. And I would say I would really love to meet Johann Sebastian Bach. He lived 1685 to 1750 in Germany. He spent most of his time in Leipzig. And all of us organists, we kind of start and we end at Bach's music. We'll play other things, we'll enjoy other things, but when it comes down to it, Bach is the epitome of music. His mathematical precision combined with his inspired compositional skills, he was the ultimate musician of any kind. And I wouldn't so much say anything to him as I would just listen to him play. I would love to hear him play. I would love to hear a church service or a concert played by him and to hear how he actually did things. And if he plays things, if he plays his music like I play his music, I would just like to sit there and be quiet and listen to him and see what he has to tell me.
And I would say probably one of the organs you want to play is touch his organ.
Yeah, and I've been fortunate to play play the organs at the Thomas Church in Leipzig, of course, but they're not original. So,
mm-hmm.
And I've also played another organ at the Wenzelskirche in Naumburg, Germany, which Bach actually dedicated. So I guess I can say I played at least one organ that Bach certainly played, for sure, and I'm proud of that fact.
Wow, so that organ still stands today.
Yes.
Well, see, that's a good thing about organ music. Well, Benjamin, thank you. Before we end real quick, how can we contact you? I know you're the dean here at the American Organist Guild chapter in Dallas. How can we contact the chapter if you're looking for a consultant for organ and also if you want to join the organization or get more information about the organization?
Sure. The best thing to do is to go to our website, which is dallasago.org. And all our contact information and my email and everything is there at dallasago.org. And we have a bunch of people who are always ready to help.
Perfect. And you're at the chapel at SMU?
Yes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for joining the program, and have a good luck on your trip next week.
Thank you. I appreciate it very
okay.
much.
Okay. Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Again, it's been another episode of The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. You can download this on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. Transcript of this will be available on blog.applecapitalgroup later today. Thank you for listening, everybody, and have a great weekend. We also ask one last question. If you can go in and write reviews regarding the show, things you like, things that was beneficial to you, we really appreciate it. Everybody have a great day and take care.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to The Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the Core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.